chapter 4, the four categories of annihilation, text number 7. Parajanya Shatavarshani
Parajanya Shatavarshani
Bhumau Rajanavarshati
Bhumau Rajanavarshati
Tadanirane Yonyam Vakshamana Kshudharditaha Chayam Yasyanti Shanakai Kaleno Padrutaha Prajaha Parajanya. The clouds. Shatavarshani. For 100 years. Bhumo. Upon the earth. Rajan. My dear king. Navarshati. Will not give rain. Tada. Then. Nirane. With the coming of famine. He indeed. Anyonyam. One another. Bhakshamana. Eating. Kshudha. By hunger. Arditaha. Distressed. Chayam. To destruction. Yasyanti. They go. Shanakai. Gradually. Kalina. By the force of time. Upadrutaha. Confounded. Prajaha. The people. As annihilation approaches, O King, there will be no rain upon the earth for 100 years. Drought will lead to famine, and the starving populace will literally consume one another. That's what it says here. Anyonyam bhakshamanaha chudha. They'll be eating each other. What's that called? Cannibalism. The inhabitants of the earth, bewildered by the force of time, will gradually be destroyed. No rain for 100 years. There'll be nothing to eat except your family and friends who probably won't be very friendly. Once you start to eat them, it's interesting. Samudram dahikam bomam rasam sambhartako ravihi rasmibhi pibhate ghorai sarvam naiva vimunchati. The sun, in its annihilating form, samvartaka ravi, will drink up with its terrible rays all the water of the ocean, of living bodies, and of the earth itself. But the devastating sun will not give any rain in return. This would make a good movie, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. tata samvartako vani sankarshana mukhotitaha tahatyani lavegotaha sunyan bhu vivaran ata. Next, the great fire of annihilation will flare up from the mouth of Lord Sankarshan. Carried by the mighty force of the wind, this fire will burn throughout the universe, scorching the lifeless cosmic shell. It's called fried. Fried. Or baked. This is the whole of the universe that's been described here. Upariyadha samantatscha shikabhir vani suryayoho dhyamanam vibhatyandam dagdhago mayapindavat. Burn from all sides, from above by the blazing sun, and from below by the fire of Lord Sankarshan, the universal sphere will glow like a burning ball of cow dung. Tata prachanda pavano varshanam adikam shatam parasam vartako vati tumram kham rajasavritam. A great and terrible wind of destruction will begin to blow for more than 100 years, and the sky covered with dust will turn grey. Tato megha kulanyanga chitravananyanekashaha shatam varashani varashanti nadanti rabasasvanai. After that, O king, groups of multicoloured clouds will gather. Roaring terribly with thunder, and will pour down floods of rain for 100 years. So we've had 100 years of drought. Then the fire of annihilation coming from both the sun and from Lord Sankarshan's mouth will burn. Doesn't say for how long, but then another 100 years, or I guess we can say for 100 years it gets burnt. Then for 100 years there's floods, rain. Tata eko dakam vishvam brahmanda vivarantaram. At that time the shell of the universe will fill up with water, forming a single cosmic ocean. Tada bhumer gandagunam prasantyapa utaplave krasta gandha tu prithivi pralayat vaya kalpate. As the entire universe is flooded, the water will rob the earth of its unique quality of fragrance, and the element earth, deprived of its distinguishing quality, will be dissolved. Purport. As clearly explained throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, the first element, sky, possesses the unique quality of sound. As creation expands, the second element, air, comes into being, and it possesses sound and touch. The third element, fire, possesses sound, touch and form. And the fourth element, water, possesses sound, touch, form and flavour. The earth possesses sound, touch, form, flavour and aroma. As each element loses its unique distinguishing quality, it naturally becomes indistinguishable from the more subtle elements and is thus effectively dissolved as a unique entity. So here we're seeing the inversion of the manifestation of the universe, or the material elements anyway. So in the purport, it's just the process is described from sky, which has the quality of sound, comes a second element, air, which possesses sound and touch. You know, you can feel the air there. Fire possesses sound, touch and form. Water possesses sound, touch, form and flavour. Earth possesses sound, touch, form, flavour and aroma, which are the elements, or the sense objects that are the focus of the senses. So now what's being described is how the reverse function is taking place, so that the total material creation, or at least the universal manifestation, is absorbed. So it's the inverse. And so there's sunshine, drought, then intense sunshine and or further intense sunshine, and then the fire of universal devastation coming from Sankarshan. Then rain for 100 years. And as a result of that, then the solids are all dissolved. And of course, it's all being cooked. Right? Everything's being cooked. It's like a. So it's interesting here that we'll read on. Today's class is going to be a bit of a meditation, more than anything, on the annihilation of the universe. Apam rasam ato tejas taliyante tanirasaha. Krasate tejaso rupam vayus tadrahitam tada liyate chanele tejo vayo kam krasate gunam savai vishati kam rajam tatas chana vaso gunam shabdam krasati bhutadhiya nabhastam anuliyate tajasas chandriyanyanga devan vikariko gunai Mahangra satyahankaram guna sattva dayaschatam krasatevya kritam rajan gunan kalena choditam atasya kalavaya vai parinama dayo gunaha anajanantam avyaktam nityam karanam avyayam. The element fire then seizes the taste from the element water, which, deprived of its unique quality, taste, merges into fire. Air seizes the form inherent in fire, and then fire, deprived of form, merges into air. The element ether seizes the quality of air, namely touch, and that air enters into ether. Then, O King, false ego, in ignorance, seizes sound, the quality of ether, after which ether merges into false ego. False ego in the mode of passion takes hold of the senses, and false ego in the mode of goodness absorbs the demigods. Then the total Mahat Tattva seizes false ego along with its various functions, and that Mahat is seized by the three basic modes of nature, goodness, passion and ignorance. My dear King Parikshit, these modes are further overtaken by the original unmanifest form of nature impelled by time. That unmanifest nature is not subject to the six kinds of transformation caused by the influence of time. Rather, it has no beginning and no end. It is the unmanifest, eternal and infallible cause of creation. Na yatra vacho namano na sattvam tamo rajava mahadadayomi na prana buddhindriya devata va na sanivesha kaluloka kaupaha na svapna jagran na chatat susuptam na kham jalam buranilog nirakaha samsupta vachchunya vad apratarkyam tanmulabhutam padamamananti. In the unmanifest stage of material nature called pradhana, there is no expression of words, no mind, and no manifestation of the subtle elements beginning from the mahat, nor are there the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, pradhana. Pradhana is the material energy in its essence. There is no life air or intelligence, nor any senses or demigods. There is no definite arrangement of planetary systems, nor are there present the different stages of consciousness, sleep, wakefulness and deep sleep. There is no ether, water, air, earth, air, fire or sun. The situation is just like that of complete sleep or a voidness. Indeed, it is indescribable. Authorities in spiritual science explain, however, that since pradhana is the original substance, it is the actual basis of material creation. Laya prakritiko yesha purusha vyaptayo yada chaktaya sampraliyante vivasa kala vidutaha. This is the annihilation called prakritika, during which the energies belonging to the Supreme Person and his unmanifest material nature, disassembled by the force of time, are deprived of their potencies and merged together totally. So how many categories of annihilation are we discussing in this chapter? Can anybody remember? Four. So this is called prakritika, and this annihilation occurs when Lord Brahma's lifespan is complete. So it's a total material annihilation. There are partial annihilations when he takes rest at the end of each of his day. And of course Lord Brahma lives for such a long period of time, inconceivable for us really to comprehend. And it's described how at this point Lord Brahma goes back home, back to Godhead. Yeah, usually. Prior to the annihilation. So this is really talking about the, you know, because it says here the demigods are gone, the modes of material nature are gone, the sense of self for the living entities must be gone. Everything is gone. It all reverts back to the original pradhana. No time factor to impel action. So it's a state of non-being, if you like. A state of being, but there's nothing happening.
Buddhindriyata rupena jnanam bhakti tadasrayam trisyat vavyatirekabhyam adyantava davastuyat.
Is the absolute truth alone who manifests in the forms of intelligence, the senses and the objects of sense perception, and who is their ultimate basis. Whatever has a beginning and an end is insubstantial because of being an object perceived by limited senses and because of being non-different from its cause, from its own cause. Purport. The word drisyatva which is because of being perceived indicates that all subtle and gross material manifestations are made visible by the potency of the Supreme Lord and again become invisible or unmanifest at the time of annihilation. They are therefore in essence not separate from the source of their expansion and withdrawal.
What does Krishna call the material energy? Bhumir apo nalo matvayu kammano buddhareva cha ahankara mitiyam me bina prakritir ashtadha. Bina prakritir ashtadha.
My separated energy. So the energy is coming from Krishna ultimately. Anadi adi govindam sarva karana karanam, Lord Brahma says. You know, some people have difficulty conceptualizing God. How can there be something that doesn't have a beginning? God must have a beginning. That's because their estimation of things is basically material, and in the material world everything has a beginning, a middle and an end, subject to the influence of time. But Lord Brahma says an adiya, this adi, this beginning has no beginning, so eternal, very hard to conceive, inconceivable. Our experiences of things material, and Krishna is purely spiritual, and so he defies the material conception. Very difficult to understand. So the material energy is an expansion of the different energies. Many, you know, parasya shakti vividhaiva shuryate is described in the Upanishads, that Krishna has multifarious potencies. The living entities are an expansion of his potencies. The Vibhinamsa expansions. And then there are the Swamsa expansions that are the expansions of himself, which have full potency. Same, endowed with the same potency. Then there's the material energy, which is an inert, has no consciousness. That's why it's considered to be inferior energy. But it's one of the multifarious potencies. The Bahiranga Shakti. So here is explaining this. Potency of the Supreme Lord is made visible by another one of his shaktis. But just as it is made visible It is also made invisible by this annihilation. There's the creation potency, if you like, the power to create, and then there's power to destroy or to annihilate. Well, not so much annihilate, because the material energy is actually it's an eternal energy of the Lord. Everything is eternal in one sense, because it comes from Krishna. But it is sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. I was listening to a lecture yesterday. Prabhupada was saying we all have the capacity to create. Huh? And Prabhupada gives the example, an interesting example. He says, we all sweat. Right? Produce water. But only a few, you know, some drops of water. But when the Lord sweats, then he produces the Karana Jal, you know, the whole causal ocean. Or we procreate, produce progeny. It says Krishna is able to create without any assistance. But if we want to create, then we need assistance. But still we have that potency to create things. So that creation shakti, or that creation potency, and then the annihilation potency, and the energy itself, they're all ultimately coming from Krishna. Sarva Karana Karanam, he's the cause of everything. And so it's described here is that the shaktis, or the energies, even though they're separate from, they're still non-different from the Lord. Whatever has a beginning and an end is insubstantial because of being an object perceived by limited senses, and because of being non-different from its own cause. So this is the nature of the material universe. Material things, they have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So no substance, nothing substantial. But they are manifest, they have substance, or they have potency, they have presence, if you like, because of the power that's invested in them by the omnipotent, by the Shaktiman, the possessor of the energy. So it comes from Krishna, it is manifest for some time by Krishna's potencies or energies, and then in due course of time it's wound up. Here's an explanation. Deepas chakshus charupam cha jyotisho na pritag bhavet evam dika nimatras cha nasyur anyatamad vitat. A lamp, the eye that views by the light of that lamp, and the visible form that is viewed are all basically non-different from the element fire. In the same way, intelligence, the senses, and sense perceptions have no existence separate from the supreme reality, although that absolute truth remains totally distinct from them. Buddhe jagaranam svapnaha shushuptiriti chochyate maya matram idam rajam nanatvam pratyagatmani. The three states of intelligence are called waking, consciousness, sleep, and deep sleep. But my dear King, the variegated experience created for the pure living entity by these different states are nothing more than illusion. Purport. Pure Krishna consciousness exists beyond the various stages of material awareness, just as darkness vanishes in the presence of light. So illusory material intelligence, which is experienced as normal perception, dreaming and deep sleep, completely vanishes in the brilliant presence of pure Krishna consciousness, the constitutional condition of every living entity. I'll read two more verses that don't have purport. Satyam yava yava proktaha sarvavaya vinamiha. Yata jala dhara vyomni bhavanti na bhavanti cha ramanidam tata vishvam avayavyudaya vyayat. Just as clouds in the sky come into being and are then dispersed by the amalgamation and dissolution of their constituent elements, this material universe is created and destroyed within the absolute truth by the amalgamation and dissolution of its elemental constitutional parts. Satyam hiyavayava proktaha sarvavaya vinamiha vinatena pritiyeran patasyevangakantava. My dear King, it is stated in the Vedanta Sutra that the ingredient cause that constitutes any manifested product in this universe can be perceived as a separate reality, just as the threads that make up a cloth can be perceived separately from their product. Does anybody have any comments or questions? I'm not sure, but you could look it up. I think this one. You'd have to look it up. Mahatmaji. From my understanding, at this point, Lord Brahma and the residents of Brahmaloka, who are Krishna conscious, basically go back home, back to Godhead. Satyaloka, Brahmaloka, which is higher than Satyaloka. At this point in time, everything is absorbed, as I understand it, after this cooking process, and everything's, you know, dissolved. Basically, everything is dissolved in itself, and so then it's at that point, it's when it's the breathing of Mahavishnu, and it's all wound back up in his body, and the living entities at that point are in total, those living entities that remain in the material creation are unconscious, totally unconscious at that point, and they're wound back up in the body of Mahavishnu to wait again for the next manifestation of the universe. So it's a total annihilation of that universe. Yeah.
So does this particular translation which states the kind of situation the family
appears from the narration that it's happening all over. It appears that the annihilation involves everyone and everything. The description of cannibalism may pertain purely to the Earth planet. It's not specified. But you could imagine that that's at least what's going on here. Stick around. Could be exciting. In other words, it's a drought for 100 years, and intense temperatures. Then an inundation for 100 years. So much so that the whole universe fills up with water. Inconceivable. Good chance if you chant Hare Krishna. Remember that this is at the end of the duration of the universe, so it's unique situation, it's a unique circumstance, and it underlines, these descriptions underline the unique characteristic of this particular Kali Yuga, the one that follows after Krishna's appearance. Right? But in this particular Kali Yuga, one gets the opportunity. That's why at the end of the previous chapter, there's the description of the Mahan Gunaha, the one good quality of this particular Kali Yuga. Is that, what is it? Kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha param brajet. One can get liberation or freedom. And in this case, not just liberation, but one can be reunited with Krishna in his original siddhadeha, original spiritual form, simply by chanting Hare Krishna in this Kali Yuga. So we've got wonderful opportunity, not commonly available in other Kali Yugas. That is the opportunity to follow in the footsteps of Mahaprabhu, and of course Lord Chaitanya is described as Namo Mahavadanyaya, the most magnanimous incarnation, because he's giving Krishna prema. That's not available in other Kali Yugas. So in this situation, it appears, you know, if you're caught in, and so we're very fortunate. We get an opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead, relatively easily. Relatively easily. Doesn't mean that there's no effort required. But relative to other Kali Yugas and other situations, circumstances, it's easy. Now, to answer your question, in a situation where it's a drought for 100 years and you've got to save your own skin, right, from being eaten by others, and you're so hungry that you've got to go and eat others too, not sure what that would do for your Krishna consciousness. It's highly stressful situation. not necessarily conducive to making advancement, spiritual advancement, when you're worrying about or you're thinking about eating your, when the Bhagavatam describes eating your children. Yuck. What do you think? How's that going to affect your Krishna consciousness? That's why it's recommended we take advantage of what we've got now. Don't wait till the end of the universal annihilation, because it's not going to be a pretty sight or experience. Not described in this section.
What was the question?
What happens to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu? Not mentioned here. But he must go somewhere too. Unmanifest. He can manifest, and I know he can create the material creation and then make it disappear. So he can manifest himself and then easily unmanifest. Because it's described that he's living in Svetadvipa, which is a spiritual planet, and it doesn't actually get annihilated at the time of universal devastation. He lives in an eternal abode, which is separate from the material creation, but at the same time manifest in it. Right? So, inconceivable how he does that. What was that, sorry? Where is it written? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, from memory. In you know, the description of Lord Nityananda, and there's a description of Balaram, and oh no, that's Chivradakshaya Vishnu. That's the super soul who lives in Svetadvipa. You're right.
I think they all expand from Karan to Bhakti Vishnu, and then
they do, yes. Yeah. You'd have to have a look. Look in the description of the manifestation of the universe. I'm very rusty on these things. I'd have to go back and have a look at it. What happens to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu? Do some research and then let us know.
Please.
Anything else?
So here Goswami is spending so much time in cosmic evolution.
Yes.
So then we are completely detached from this material world.
Yes, well, that's mentioned in the introduction, and Jagannath Ram mentioned it the other day. Really, the next annihilation that's described is the annihilation of the material body, and it's mentioned in the introduction, and we can assume that that's the preparation is for Maharaj Parikshit to leave his body. So he's describing the annihilation. And the next annihilation is the ending of the body. So he's preparing. He's being prepared. Sukadeva Goswami is preparing Maharaj Parikshit for the inevitable. And ultimately all of us also. Each one of us has to ultimately face the annihilation of this body. So whether it's annihilation of the universe or partial annihilation, ultimately we all have to face the annihilation of this vehicle in this lifetime.